What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Rest of Season Rankings Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Seifter, and I am joined once again, and as I always am, by my co-host, Bart Wheeler. And Bart, it's been 2 weeks here since we recorded. We did this big hustle to get through all of our position preview shows prior to opening day. And then as soon as opening day hit, I went on vacation for a week and we didn't record. So we have new rankings up on the website, rosrankings.com, new rest of season rankings, our first set in season. And we have a whole lot to catch up on, don't we?
We sure do. And I'll be truthful with you. I mean, like, I actually haven't watched a ton of baseball yet because, you know, college basketball has been on and I've been watching March Madness. I get caught up in that. I was even caught up watching the women's, you know, Elite Eight or whatever it was the other night. So now that that's winding down, you know, NIT even, I get sucked in. I'm watching so much college basketball, but that's winding down. So I'm ready to turn the page on the baseball.
Oh, man. Watching NIT over your fantasy players, I cannot sign off on that. I was not able to watch any of the matchup between Corbin Burns and Cole Reagans today, of course, because I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and Masson is not on YouTube TV, and it's not on MLB TV. It's blacked out for me, so I can't watch any Orioles or Nationals games this season, and I am not happy about that. But that's a rant for another day. I get you on the basketball. I've been watching a lot of the tournament as well, and the women's. Caitlin Clark is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I have been watching some baseball, and I plan to be watching a lot more baseball in these coming weeks. And it's just it's so nice to have it back. And let's just jump right into it. I mean,
yeah,
one thing that hasn't been so nice is the injury bug hitting early and often. And it's hit pretty hard in the infield, especially third base so far this season. It's been rough, and it's been young players that people were genuinely excited about that have suffered injuries that maybe are not season ending. Maybe one of them will be. We'll see. But they are like kind of 2 month type of injuries, maybe 3 month type of injuries for Josh Young and Royce Lewis.
Yeah.
Matt McClain was the other one I was hinting at there that maybe could be the whole season, but really disappointing to have these guys go down. Where are you at in terms of stashing these guys? I know like a lot of leagues, there's a ton of IL spots. So there it's kind of a no brainer, but some leagues are more limited in that respect. The latest news on Josh Young is that he could be out 8 to 10 weeks after having surgery. So that's a pretty lengthy absence from his fractured wrist. How are you approaching him?
I mean, I think if you're in like an 8 to 10 team league, you can just drop Josh Young. Honestly, like if you only have two or three IL spots, because I mean, yeah, like in our league that we're in, I think, what do we have, 4 IL spots? I'm using them all right now. You know, I've got Matt McClain, unfortunately. He was one of my keepers, and gosh, the timing of that injury was just rough. But I've got Walker Buehler, who we'll talk about, Shane Baz, Johan Duran. I've got him stashing Kyle Bradish. So these are all the, you know, there's lots of pitchers who people probably are trying to stash. You know, we'll talk about some of these guys in a little bit, but I don't know. I think if you already have two or three guys on the IL, I don't mind dropping Josh Young. And it's unfortunate because, yeah, we both liked him coming into the season, like borderline top 100 guy. Maybe he was a top 100 guy with a lot of promise. So yeah, I think you can drop him if you're maybe if you're in a 12 team league or bigger, you try to hold on to him.
Yeah, it's tough because a lot of those pitchers you mentioned are no sure thing. And I feel like the thing about Josh Young is most people that drafted him, like he was their starting third baseman, you know, and third base, you know, as we talked about in our position preview, there's a lot of interesting names, but there's not a lot of sure things outside of the top 10. So like if you drafted Josh Young, you probably don't have an Alex Bregman or a Nolan Arenado or someone higher end like a Ellie De La Cruz or a Manny Machado or Gunnar Henderson. You know, you're probably delving into the waiver wire to find a replacement for Josh Young. So in that sense, I don't know. Like I kind of would like to hold on to him if I can, you know, over a guy like Shane Baz, who we have no idea what you're going to get from Shane Baz. You know, I mean, if you get half a season from Josh Young, I think that's still going to be worth having. I mean, he was off to a fantastic start. He was hitting 412, already had hit two homers and stolen a base this season. So I would really eight team leagues. I don't know why anyone plays in an eight team league. Sorry at home if you do, but that's just too shallow a league unless you have really deep rosters, I think. But 10 and 12 team leagues, I would do my best to try to stash Josh Young. If you're in a league with no IL spots, I think you have to move on. But if you have two, I would do my best to hold on to him.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking at like the most added players over at third. Jordan Westberg is a name who's available in about half of Yahoo leagues. You know, he's been looking good with my Orioles, hit a walk-off home run the other day, a hit in pretty much every game. JD Davis, who's now with Oakland, available at first and third. He's only 12% rostered, you know, and he's had a hit in every single game, and he's going to play every day for Oakland. He had two home runs in a game the other day in Oakland, which is a cavernous ballpark. So there are options. So yeah, I mean, like, I think you got to play the waiver wire game. Well, you're going to have to play the waiver wire game if you have Young. So I guess the question is, do you have the space?
Yeah, you certainly have to play the waiver wire game, and we'll talk. We're gonna have a segment on tonight's show talking about waiver wire pitchers and also waiver wire hitters. So we can get into that at that point in the discussion, and you know, but a guy like JD Davis, I mean, that I just think the odds of him being as good as Josh Young was going to be are very, very small. So like, you need to get by while Josh Young is out. Whether you're able to find somebody that's actually going to be a top 10 kind of a third baseman is a challenge, I think. So
yeah,
in that sense, like that's kind of why I would, yes, you have to play the waiver wire game, but until I actually have a locked in third baseman that I'm confident is going to be a top 10 guy, I'd want to hold on.
So Royce Lewis, I actually drafted him in a league, and I was super excited to have him. I think I took him in like the fourth or fifth round. You know, I even reached, you know, a round early, and he hit a home run in his first game in Kansas City and then got hurt in that exact same game. So, yeah, he's this quad strain is sounding like it's very severe. And, of course, Royce Lewis has not been very healthy in his career so far. So it's like you mentioned Matt McClain, and it's like Royce Lewis also, just with his injury history, I don't trust it at all. So you got to dip into the waiver wire pool for if you have Royce Lewis as well, because you drafted him even higher than Young if you drafted Royce Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about Royce Lewis is I do feel confident that he will make it back and play half the season. I mean, it, you know, but the question is, like, what kind of production you get from him once he's back, because, you know, being that it was a quad injury, like, I don't expect to get any stolen bases from him when he's back, you know? So I think he's a guy that, like, it actually does reduce my expectations for him. I mean, maybe you can say the same thing about Josh Young, because, I mean, a fractured wrist is nothing to sneeze at when you're a hitter. I mean, that could certainly impact your ability to hit the ball with power.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have to see how he recovers. Like, he could have like a month when he comes back where he doesn't hit with as much authority as you're used to. But Royce Lewis, you might not get the steals all season. So that's something to consider there. But I do feel like he will be back. I mean, Matt McClain is the one where it's like he might not be back at all this season.
Oh, I know. And like I said, with the timing of when we declared keepers and all that, I was like, okay, he's coming back. He was playing in spring training a little bit. I saw what I needed to see. And then the shoulder thing was just much bigger issue. And yeah, went under the knife. It sounds like, I mean, the press releases and everything they had, it sounds like obviously they want him to come back this year, but it's like, you're, like you said, it's no sure thing. I might give it a little bit of time, but like I said, I'm dealing with IL issues already. So I might be dropping one of my keepers already, which stinks, but you know, I love churning out that roster. You've seen me pick up all these pitchers and stuff. Like I love churning out the end of my roster. And right now that includes Matt McClain.
Yeah. I mean, in a keeper league, that's the question is, can you actually see a scenario where you would be keeping him next season? You know, like what would he have to do to make it worth it to you? Like if he came back in September and hit well, then do you feel confident keeping him next season? You know, because that's probably a best case scenario at this point, right?
Exactly. I mean, we saw someone like Logan Ohapi come back and like tear it up last year. You know, if we had seen like Vinny Pasquantino come back and be on fire, like, yeah, like you could see a scenario where you might want to keep him, but yeah, I think I'll have some other options. So he's probably going to hit the waiver wire soon for me, even in the keeper league.
So big picture in terms of Now, hopefully nobody has this scenario, because if you do, you're really cursed. But in terms of Josh Young, Royce Lewis, and Matt McClain, how would you rank those guys in terms of best stashes on the IL?
I think I was so excited about Royce Lewis coming into the year that I think I would probably prioritize stashing him the most. And I also like feel most confident that he could come back the soonest. So it's both of those things. And then I'd say Josh Young and then Matt McClain, a distant last.
Yeah, I agree. I think McLean's a distant third because of the timetable for him. The other two I expect to miss a similar amount of time. And like I said, they both have injuries that could affect their production once they return. So if you can trade those guys and get, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, I would probably consider doing that if you can get somebody that's better than what's available on the waiver wire to you. But otherwise, I think they're guys you probably just need to stash and hope that they can have a strong second half.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Justin Steele dealing with a hamstring issue. Sounds like he's going to be out until at least May, so we won't see him here in April. It's rough because like a lot of people like Justin Steele coming into this season. You know, he was probably drafted off the top of my head probably like around SP 25-ish, right? So pretty high end, you know, starting pitcher, and to just not get him right out of the gate is tough. But yeah, another guy that you just have to stash on your IL and wait around. Hopefully you do have those three or four IL spots like a lot of leagues do.
Yeah, there was like a little bit of a tease with Justin Steele where it was like he was throwing on the field immediately after the injury, like just a few days after the injury, and it kind of gave some false hope that he might be out for like the minimum stay. But it's a pretty significant hamstring injury, so like you said, out till May. Again, it is a hamstring and not an arm injury. So like,
yep,
that's a really good thing when it comes to pitchers. I mean, we often see it with pitchers dealing with elbow or shoulder injuries. Like it might be framed as a 2-week injury at the time it happens, and they end up missing a lot more time than that. So with a hamstring, you can at least feel pretty confident that you should get at least 4 months out of Justin Steele, assuming he doesn't suffer another injury. So he's definitely a player that I would continue to stash.
All right. Sean Murphy getting into some catchers, dealing with an injury. I think it's an oblique. Sounds like he might miss roughly a month or so. It's always hard with obliques to know sort of the severity, 'cause they use different words like minor and major and grade 1, 2 and all this. So I don't know exactly how long Murphy's going to be out, but, there are some options you can pick up. We'll talk about a couple. I'm just looking at our rest of season rankings. It looks like he's still in our top 10. At least combined. I think I might have moved him slightly out. Like, I think I moved him behind guys like Francisco Alvarez, Cal Raleigh. I don't know. Luis Camposano is kind of the one who, he's a hot ad right now. He's had a good week. So that would be one that would be tough. Like, if you're in a one catcher league, would you add Camposano and drop Murphy if you only had a couple IL spots? That might be kind of a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Camposano more, but yeah, I would be okay with that. Although the one thing I will say is that like, it's a grade 1 oblique strain for Sean Murphy, and
okay,
grade 1 is the least severe. So he could actually be back in a week from now. So I wouldn't be in a rush to drop him. I mean, I don't like using my IL spots or bench spots for that matter on catchers. I unless you play in a two catcher league, like I pretty much only want to roster one catcher most of the time. I might try to, you know, like our league is a daily league. So, you know, in those formats, I might try to pick up like an extra catcher game once in a while towards the end of the season, because you tend to fall behind on your catcher games. Catchers just don't play that often. That's why I really enjoyed getting a guy like Salvador Perez, because when he's not catching, he's playing first base or DH. So it's nice to get those bonus games from catchers, but most catchers are sitting once or twice a week. All that being said, like Sean Murphy, I do still think he's a top 10 catcher. I think he can be back, like I said, 7 to 10 days from now, back into a great lineup, and tons of upside there. So I like Camposano, so that would make me think. But generally speaking, I would just try to hold on to Murphy. I don't think you're going to have to wait too long.
Okay. We've got Eloy Jimenez on our list here. It says that he might do a little bit of running today, but he's dealing with an adductor injury, so dealing with a muscle injury, not an oblique. But the game today versus Atlanta was postponed, so he wasn't going to play anyway. We don't really know a whole lot about the injury, but he hasn't hit the IL. But he's also someone who's dealt with a lot of injuries. So Eloy, I've moved down my rankings a little bit, and you know, last year I had him probably in my top 100, you know, and by the end of the year he was probably in my like around 300 or so. So I'm just, he's just falling down my rankings, and he probably will continue to all season. I just don't have much confidence in him staying healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I was out on him even before this season began. I think you were the one that kind of stuck with, we were both Eloy stans coming into last season.
Last year.
Yeah, and I it's kind of like with Luis Severino, you jumped ship this year and I didn't. And with Eloy, it's the opposite. I jumped ship and you didn't. So, yeah, maybe it sounds like maybe you're jumping ship now, though. I mean, he's never played more than 122 games in a season, and he's only played more than 85 games in a season twice. So for me, you know, we talk a lot this season about, or this point in the season, about confirmation bias. And this is definitely a confirmation bias thing for me. It's just Eloy Jimenez just can never seem to stay healthy. He's kind of like Byron Buxton, you know, it's just the next injury is always around the corner.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about these pitchers who are on the IL. We've got Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler. Actually, you know, I've been paying close attention to Buehler because I have him in a couple leagues, and he's been making rehab starts. So he's already made one. He's going to make his second rehab start apparently on Saturday in Oklahoma City. So I'm just glad that he's out there throwing. I feel like we could see Walker Buehler back pretty soon. So I'm creeping him up, you know, like inside my top 150 or so over on my rest of season rankings. What about Buehler? Like, if you were stashing these guys, I guess, who do you like the most out of, you know, the stashes? And have you been moving them all, like, up a little bit, your rankings?
I have. I mean, the injury news on all of these guys has been promising. And it's actually, you know, a big part of my strategy in fantasy leagues is I just love, like, I'm willing to be patient, you know, and I'm willing to wait for guys that, I like, they may not throw 200 innings, but the innings they do throw are going to be really good, you know, and that's what I feel about these guys. So I do have Buehler the highest just because I do think he's the closest to returning. But of course he's returning to a great situation, as we know, but honestly, now that I think about it, I'm not sure that the gap between him and Scherzer should be that big, because Scherzer is still a great pitcher as well, and the news on him has been incredibly positive. He was placed on the 15-day IL instead of the 60-day IL. I think it was generally assumed coming into the season he was going to be on the 60-day IL. So that tells me that the Rangers are expecting him back before June, sometime in May. And he's coming back from a back issue. So, again, not an arm issue. So that's another thing. I mean, you know, that's the issue with Buehler that's a little bit of a wild card. I mean, he's got the elbow as to surgery to come back from, and it's been a long road back for Buehler. So it's, you know, I feel maybe a little more confident that we get, you know, good numbers right away from Scherzer than I do from Buehler. So that kind of negates the fact that I do think Buehler will probably be back maybe 3 weeks, a month ahead of Scherzer.
Yeah, and then Kershaw is on the 60-day IL. But I tend to agree with you, and I need to move Scherzer up a little bit. It looks like I have him around 250 in my overall. You have him closer to 150. And yeah, the gap between Buehler and Scherzer probably should be a little bit closer. And I think it makes Scherzer, like, look at your league mates, how many IL spots they're using. You know, because if they've got Scherzer and they've got another guy or two on IL who they aren't stashing, you know, but they could, maybe that's a trade target. You know, maybe trade for Scherzer and someone if you have the IL spots.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I just love that. People are, you know, and again, I'm not saying you should be optimistic about injuries in general, but like patience is your friend in these things. It depends, you have to know your league, you know, like you can't sacrifice putting a good lineup on the table every single day in your league. So if you don't have the roster flexibility to be able to stash these kind of players, then forget about it. But if you do, like, I would much rather stash these high upside players that you have to wait a month or two for than just waste roster, you know, bench spots on guys that are just kind of place fillers, you know?
Yep.
As far as Kershaw goes, I mean, the way I look at it is we never get a full season from Clayton Kershaw anyway. So like
that
was already built into what Clayton Kershaw was. And we've seen him in 150 innings be like a top five starting pitcher, you know. And I know he's not quite as dominant as he was earlier in his career, and he's not going to pitch 150 innings this year. Like, he'll be lucky to get to 100, but those are going to be 100 really good innings. Like, he's like, I wouldn't bet against him having a sub 3 ERA and, you know, a sub 110 whip once again and tons of wins pitching for the Dodgers. So, like, I'm fine waiting for that, even if it's not till after the All-Star break.
Okay. Let's get into some demotions. We've got some like minor league demotions, some guys in the minor leagues, a couple guys who are up. Estuary Ruiz is an interesting one. We kind of warned people when we talked about outfielders on him, even before the season started, like, even though it's the A's, this dude might not be playing. I didn't think he'd get sent down this quick. So I don't really know what's going on with the quick demotion. But we both have him ranked outside of our top 300 players right now. I think he'll come back relatively soon, but even if he does, like, he's only good for stolen bases. He can't really hit that well. So he's like, I mean, there's plenty of other guys who we'll talk about in like the hitters who are moving up our rankings who can steal bases. So like, I just don't think Estuary Ruiz is like a must roster at all. He's 63% rostered in Yahoo, and that's dropping. I think there's plenty of guys you can drop him for right now.
Oh yeah. He was an easy drop for me. I mean, I was pretty far out on him even coming into the season. I don't like building my teams around a player like Estuary Ruiz. I mean, he's the kind of player that, I think I mentioned it when we were doing the outfield preview show, but like, he's the kind of player I might be willing to add halfway through the season if I need to pick up the pace and steals a little bit, like maybe make a trade for a guy like that or something like that. But coming into the season, my goal is to have a balanced team that is producing across the board. And I just think it's like kind of lowered expectations to roster a player like Estuary Ruiz. So I just aim higher than that. And then, you know, yeah, we did talk about it in the preseason. There were some rumors that he wasn't going to play every day. So it was kind of already on the table. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's not a great hitter in real life. He's not a great defensive player either. He's not a core foundational piece of this team that's in rebuild mode, as they always are, it seems. You know, this team is going to probably move, and they're not going to have Estuary Ruiz be the face of the team in their, you know, in their new home. So I don't think it's a sure thing he gets called up anytime soon. I mean, I know there were rumors on Twitter that like he was sent down because he wore a protest bracelet. Oh. But come on, I don't think so. I think it's because this is a classic example of a player where like because a lot of people do fantasy, like they overrate a player like this. Like major league GMs don't care about fantasy baseball. They care about winning actual games. And Estuary Ruiz is not a player that really helps a real life baseball team win games. So I don't think there's any certainty that he's back anytime soon personally.
Okay. Well, someone who I think can help the Mets win some games is JD Martinez, your boy. You know, he was with the Dodgers last year, had 33 homers, over 100 RBIs. Awesome season with the Dodgers. I think he signed like maybe the day after our last podcast episode. So it was like late in spring training, and he still hasn't really like he's an extended spring training right now. But the thought is he'll be up with the Mets in a week or two. So we'll see. I think he'll be, I don't know, batting fourth or fifth in that lineup. So I think JD Martinez is kind of a sneaky ad, and he is 72% rostered. So he's still out there in some leagues.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, well, first of all, he's going to bat fourth. I think they've already announced that.
And okay.
They kind of need him immediately because their offense has really struggled so far this season. They are not looking good offensively. They need that his bat in the middle of their batting order. And, you know, we talked about it in the preseason. Like, his numbers last season were really impressive, as they usually are. And you can point to some things. You can say, you know, he had 100 and over 100 RBIs in, I don't know what, 120 games or something like that. And it was because he played for the Dodgers. And, like, he's not going to drive in that many runs with the Mets. Fine. But he could also play more games, you know. So he could still get to 100 RBIs over more games. His strikeout rate did go up last season too, sure, but he still hit 270 like he always seems to, and his expected batting average was right there at 270 as well. So I think he's a guy that can immediately step in, hit for a 270-ish batting average, 30 plus home run power, and 100 RBIs, and He has outfield eligibility in Yahoo too, so he's just he really is a must roster player, I feel like.
All right. Well, what about these two young, super young guys? Are they must roster? We got Junior Caminero and my boy Jackson Holliday. So it seemed like Holliday was going to make the opening day roster. He did not. He's still like 75% rostered in Yahoo. Caminero for the Rays is about 36%, and he's dealing with a quad injury, which is minor. It's not like, you know, it's not like Royce Lewis and his quad injury. But I don't know what's going on with these teams, and these guys are really young, could probably use some time in the minors. But I think we could see both of these guys in about a month. You know, like, what are your thoughts on these two? Do you think Caminero is like kind of a sneaky add and stash, or do you think he could be down like all year?
That's a tough one to say. I mean, the Rays have actually been reasonably aggressive with promoting prospects in the past. Wander Franco certainly comes to mind. So there's some hope there, I think. The Jackson Holliday one was really surprising. I mean, it was kind of assumed by most people that he was going to break camp with the team. He's been lighting it up in the minors so far this season too. So I think I'd prefer Holliday over Caminero as a stash. I think Holliday probably will be up relatively soon. And he could give a jolt to that. I mean, they're a good offense already, but they've got a few guys that they could probably stand to upgrade. And I think he could be an upgrade for them. So, you know, the Orioles are in it to win it this season. So I think Holliday should get called up relatively soon, and I would definitely have him stashed. Caminero is a little more borderline for me, but in a redraft league, I don't know. I don't think he's a mustache player, but it really comes down to how much bench space you have. Certainly if you have like NA spots where you can stash minor league players, he would be a must roster guy.
Sure. And I have Holliday in a redraft league, and you know, I'm an Orioles fan, of course, so I might end up holding on to him for 2-3 months if that's what it takes. I'm gonna have a really hard time dropping him, and I don't have an NA spot, so he's clogging up a spot, but that's okay. I'm okay. Like, fantasy baseball needs to be fun, and I drafted him knowing that this could happen, so here we are. Yeah,
I don't think you have to wait too long.
Yeah, I hope not. Victor Scott, we had him in here, kind of a transition to move into some guys who were, I mean, he's in the majors right now. He's stealing some bases. I actually dropped a couple bucks on him to lead the league in steals, but that would require him to stay in the majors all season, which, who knows? He might not do that.
Also require him to get on base, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I actually bet him the other day to, yeah, have a steal, and he went like 0-for-4. And so, yeah, that's frustrating. So we might be dealing with another kind of Estuary Ruiz situation, but a younger guy with more promise, but that might be the type of fantasy situation we have.
Yeah, you know, I was kicking myself a little bit because I picked up Victor Scott, and then when he got sent down, I dropped him, and then with the was it the injury to Dylan Carlson that opened up the spot, and then they went right back and brought him to the major league roster. So someone else beat me to the punch on adding him after that. So. But, you know, honestly, like I said about Estuary Ruiz, like these kind of players are not the players I'm most excited to roster anyway. I mean, I did hope that Victor Scott might have a little more power potential than Estuary Ruiz, but it's not by a lot, you know, and he struggled so far. So the Cardinals seem to be a team that's kind of set in their ways about veteran players. And, you know, I think that they're going to want to get those guys. Once they get those guys back, they're going to want to play them. So, you know, Lars Nootbaar, Dylan Carlson, like I think it could be a situation where Victor Scott does get sent back down. And if that is in fact the case, even in a categories league, I'd have trouble stashing him.
Yeah. And I mean, so far he only has the one stolen base, which he had on opening day. And like, I much prefer my other bet where I had Jaren Duran to lead the league in stolen bases because he is lighting up the base paths.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should have bet on Bryce Turang, who we'll talk about in a little while. But before we do that, let's talk about some pitchers, because I feel like when it comes to the waiver wire early in the season, like pitching is – there's just so many interesting names. Like in this day and age, teams are constantly tinkering with pitchers. The pitchers are adding new pitches. They're going to drive line and adding more velocity. We can see these pitchers come out of nowhere and become really valuable fantasy assets. We can also see them look good in one start and then end up being terrible, and you know, people pick them up and get burned. So it's always tricky this time of year to have a ton of confidence in saying which pitchers make for good pickups and which ones don't. But, you know, we made a list here of some pitchers that are off to a good start through their first or second time through the rotation. We have to start, of course, with Ronel Blanco, who threw a no-hitter in his first start of the season against the Blue Jays. So that was a good way to start. Garrett Crochet has had two great starts now. Luis Gil, that might be Gil for you scoring at home, of the Yankees, is promising. Jared Jones of the Pirates has looked good.
Yeah.
Old friend Jack Flaherty is back and maybe finding the fountain of youth. Garrett Whitlock is finally outside of the bullpen and locked into a starting rotation spot, and Boston seems to be getting good performances from their starters so far this year. Brandon Fott is a young pitcher who had a rough first go in the majors, but seems like he could be settling in. Zach Littell of the Rays, you know, this is a team that always seems to find diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
And then Jordan Hicks is another, like Whitlock, another converted reliever who's trying to establish himself as a starter. So of all these guys, who are some of your favorites?
Well, my favorite to talk about, when you mentioned Zach Littell, it's funny because I think we did, what, 3 episodes on starting pitcher preview, and I think he had to be like in the third one because we were digging so deep and naming all kinds of names. And I think when I named him, you were like, I don't even know if I have him on the list.
Yeah, I don't think I did.
you go so deep with starting pitcher. And to your point, like, yeah, you got to be adding these guys and see what happens. I've been in our league, I've been trying to add guys like a day before, you know, see what we have. I added Casey Mize. You didn't have him on the list, but like, I added him just to see what he can do. He was supposed to pitch today, but it got rained out. So we'll see. Maybe we'll be talking about him in our next one. Of these guys, my favorite, I mean, Garrett Crochet, we've already seen 2 starts from him. So I feel like I kind of have to say he's probably my favorite. I actually dropped Nestor Cortez in one league and picked up Garrett Crochet. Cortez, coincidentally, is like one of the most dropped pitchers in all of Yahoo League. So he hit the bricks for me. Yeah, I think Crochet is like one of the most interesting. And then Jared Jones is very intriguing. He had 10 strikeouts in his debut. So I don't understand why he's not more rostered. I mean, I guess everyone's excited about Paul Skeens, but Jared Jones is the guy who's up and starting right now. Maybe it's because he's with the Pirates, but, you know.
Hey, the Pirates are off to a great start, though.
Yeah, so are my Tigers, my other AL team.
There you go. yeah, no, I mean, I think Garrett Crochet and Jared Jones certainly have to be at or near the top of the list, just based on the fact that they both have a lot of strikeout potential, and – you know, I mean, Crochet, yeah. At this point, 2 starts means he's got twice the sample size that these other guys have. So it's another example of a guy who's transitioning from a bullpen role. So we'll have to see how it goes. But, like, yeah, I mean, I think those guys are both solid pickups. Ronel Blanco, too. I mean, like, he's got – I mean, he's 30 years old, so he's like a late bloomer. But, like, he does have a lot of swing and miss ability to his game. And, you know, in that game – in that no-hitter, he only, quote-unquote, had 7 strikeouts in his 9 innings. But those 7 strikeouts were all in the first 7 innings. And then I think at that point, like, you're trying to preserve your pitch count to try to get the no-no, you know? So, like, he probably wasn't trying to work deep into counts late in the game, you know? So I don't really hold it against him. I think he's got quite a lot of strikeout potential. And then, you know, Jack Flaherty and Garrett Whitlock, too. I mean, like, we've seen both of those guys be really good at times in different roles. But Flaherty, it's been, like, a really long journey back. But, you know, he used to be a really good pitcher. And, again, it's your Tigers, man. It's a good it's a good ballpark to pitch in, for sure. You know, I know he's not as, like, sexy a name because he's a veteran as opposed to, like, these young up-and-comers. But he's right up there for me as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, of the young, more unknowns, it's Crochet and Jared Jones. But of the veterans, it's Flaherty and Whitlock. Exactly who you said. And I have them in a couple leagues. And Whitlock, and some of it's confirmation bias, right? Because, like, I liked them coming into the season. Flaherty was having a really good spring. Whitlock, we talked about the Red Sox starters. You know, I thought that they were just a little bit underrated coming in. we'll see. They just got done with a sweeping Oakland, so that obviously helps. So we'll see what happens when they face my Orioles and the Yankees and all these guys. So Blue Jays, Rays.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like the Red Sox, there might be something with the coaching staff there that's helping these pitchers boost their strikeout rates, though. Because, I mean, we're seeing really good strikeout numbers from – it's not just Whitlock. I mean, Pivetta was great.
Yeah.
Hauk.
Cutter Crawford.
Yeah, those guys. So maybe the Red Sox rotation – I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I certainly hope so. Maybe their rotation is going to be better than expected. I mean, these are all guys that were like kind of people maybe draft them as like fifth or sixth fantasy starters, you know, maybe with Cutter Crawford, it was like a fourth, but like, you know, it was kind of like cautiously dipping your toes in the Red Sox, in the dirty water of Red Sox Nation there. But like now I feel like, yeah, granted it was against the A's, but you feel a little more confident. I mean, Hauk could be on this list too. He's looking like a potential pickup as well.
Yeah. I'll just mention Jordan Hicks too. You kind of listed all these guys. He had a really good start, got a win, went five innings, six strikeouts, didn't give up a run. I think another converted reliever. So we'll have to see if he, like Crochet, can keep it going all year. But honestly, like what you were talking about earlier, it's like I play the waiver wire game. We're talking about guys picking up off the waiver wire. Just smoke them if you got them, right? Like if you pick up Jordan Hicks, if he's only going to throw 100 innings, if he gets hurt, okay. I mean, that's tough for him. But for fantasy, I think you just have to roll with it if he's looking good out there.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't have the confidence, though, that like these guys are going to be good. Like they might be good, but they might not, you know? So like that's where it becomes a little tricky for me in terms, I'm a little more on the cautious side in terms of pickups, like, because you do have to drop somebody to make room for these guys. And
sure.
It really comes down to like who that is, you know? I mean, if you you put a few names in here to talk about, like guys like John Gray and Louis Varland. Sure. Like I would be fine dropping those guys for anyone, any of the names we just mentioned.
Me too.
But Kenta Maeda and even Nestor Cortez, I don't know, man. I know they haven't been good so far, but I mean, first of all, Kenta Maeda gets the ace in his next start. So like,
yeah,
I think his stock could jump right back up. And I mean, he's a pretty proven pitcher. I mean, yeah, his ERA might be around four, but his whip is going to be good and he's going to strike out like 10 batters per nine. That's pretty much what he's consistently done over his career. So like that would be a pretty good scenario for most of these other pitchers we're talking about. So I don't think I would drop him for any of these guys, honestly. And Cortez, maybe. Maybe you could talk me into that. That one's really close. I was very high on Cortez coming into the season. He has now had two bad starts in a row. I would probably wait one more start, especially if I see like all of these guys on the wire or like three or four of them. And if I miss out on one, I'll just, you know, and Cortez has another bad start, I'll just pick up a different one, you know, because honestly, it's like hard to have a lot of confidence in ranking these pickups from top to bottom.
Yeah, I think with Cortez, I mean, he's coming off a rough year, but he had two really good seasons before that. So we've seen him be really good. I guess if you keep him, can you even start him your next start? So it also depends on, like, you know, in a league like ours where you have an innings cap, that's fine. You could also just put him on your bench and wait and see. In some leagues, maybe head to head and stuff where you really want to have a pitcher, or points leagues, maybe that makes you want to drop a guy if you know you're going to pick up a guy and have a little more confidence starting him.
Yeah. I mean, he had a 1.25 whip last year over a strikeout per inning. I mean, his ERA was just short of five, so that wasn't great. But
yeah,
we've seen a lot of pitchers have worse bad seasons than that.
True.
I mean, the biggest issue was just that he wasn't healthy most of the year.
Yeah. Anyone else, as far as like I was just looking at my note on the drops. I was going to mention Shane Baz because like, I think he's droppable, if you're limited on the IL spots or even not. Like I have him stashed and he's one that I'm certainly considering, dropping in a couple leagues.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind dropping him to add one of these guys because I mean, it's not like we know what Shane Baz is going to be when he's back anyway.
Exactly. You know? And so. you might get a month or two out of Crochet or Hicks, you know, and that might be fine.
Yep.
You might still get to pick up Shane Baz. Sorry.
That's true. That's true. And then there's some deeper pitchers to talk about as well. Frankie Montas, I guess, is, you said he was looking good again tonight as we're recording.
Yeah.
So that would be two good starts in a row for him. Brady Singer looked awfully good in his first start, and I think he's got a very favorable schedule coming up as well. So, you know, that's another thing I'm sort of factoring in early in the season. Like, because I don't have, like, supreme confidence in how good these guys are going to be, like, I want soft landing spots, you know? Like, I'm probably not going to start any of these guys if they have a tough matchup coming up next. But, like, Brady Singer gets the White Sox. So, like, I'm all for giving him a shot in that circumstance. The next game after that, he gets Houston. So, I very might well bench him if I pick him up. You know, unless if he really dominates the White Sox, maybe you'd get aggressive and try him against Houston. But realistically, you're eyeing another game against the White Sox after that. So, you know, early in the season with these guys, you don't know exactly how good they're going to be. Just try to pick on those bad offenses as much as you can.
Yeah, and Singer, you know, he just had 10 strikeouts against the Twins. So, yeah, definitely fire him up against the White Sox, like you said. Montas did end up getting the win tonight in Philly. Went almost six innings, so 5 2/3, had 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, gave up 5 hits. So pretty solid outing. I mean, I will say, he's one I'm going to be kind of, I don't know, when he starts playing these games in the summertime at Great American Ballpark, especially depending on the matchup. Like, I don't know how long I'm going to be really trusting Frankie Montas.
Oh, I don't, yeah, I have trouble trusting him. I have trouble trusting Brady Singer, too, to be honest with you. Like,
yeah,
those are both guys that I'm kind of looking at them more as streamers right now. And then, like, if you want to go even deeper, Michael Soroka and Mike Clevenger are both guys who have been useful fantasy pitchers in the past. It's just, with Soroka, it's been a while. Clevenger actually wasn't too bad last season, and he's back in the same situation with the White Sox he was in last year. So,
yeah,
he's kind of sneaky. I mean, he's not up with the team yet. He signed really late. So I don't think, he's not like JD Martinez where you need to stash him ahead of time. But once he does get called up, if, you know, I probably wouldn't start him in his first start, but he could be a streamer within a week or two here as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a minute since he had some really good seasons in Cleveland, like 5-6 years, but we've seen,
but he wasn't that bad last season though.
Yeah. He wasn't that bad last season. And I mean, the White Sox, yeah, they traded Dylan Cease, and they're like, I guess we need to re-sign Clevenger. Yeah, I think these are deep ads or watch list type guys. But yeah, like I said, I love adding these guys and just throwing them on my bench to see how their first or second starts go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so interesting this time of year. It's kind of throwing darts, you know. But
yeah,
some of the names on the list we just mentioned are probably going to end up being, you know, top 40 starting pitchers this season, or at least top 50. And some of them are going to be awful, you know, and it's just hard to know which is which.
I mean, honestly, if I was putting my money on it, like, I would put my money on Garrett Whitlock and Zach Littell. And Littell is just because it's the Rays, man. And, like, I think he'll have really good ratios and pick up a bunch of wins, and he'll end up sneaking into that top 40 somehow.
Yeah, I actually think Ronald Blanco, I mean, the Astros have a great track record of getting good performances out of pitchers. So
they do.
Like, he has to fight to hold on to a rotation spot because Justin Verlander will be back. But but yeah, I mean, if he can hold on to a rotation spot, we've seen guys like Christian Javier emerge there kind of out of nowhere. So
yep.
I wouldn't put it past him either. And Jared Jones too. I mean, if the Pirates really do take a big step forward this year, Jones could be a huge part of that.
Yep. All right. You want to get into some hitters?
Absolutely. So, you know, we opened up the show talking about all those infield injuries. So why don't we talk about some infield possible replacements? And, you know, with the Royce Lewis injury, for me, there's an obvious replacement. It's Willie Castro, who I'm a big fan of Willie Castro. I think he's really underrated. He was kind of a player that was already on my radar anyway, because he's kind of like, he was going to fill like a Whit Merrifield kind of role for the Twins before the Royce Lewis injury, where he would just slot in all over the field and still probably play 5 times a week. Now with Royce Lewis out, I think he's an everyday player. He's going to play at third mostly, but he'll still play in the outfield occasionally as well. He stole 33 bases last year in like half a season.
Yeah.
And also had a decent number of home runs. So, like, you know, he's like, to get stolen bases at third base is pretty uncommon. And he can deliver that. So, like, to me, he's like flying way under the radar because I think he's only like 10% rostered in Yahoo.
Yeah, he's 9% rostered. I'm looking at him right here. And like you said, he's third base eligible. He's also second in outfield. But like you said, if you need stolen bases at that third base position, there aren't too many guys who can do that. Yep. Bryce Terang, you know, he's one. So the saga in our league with me was I picked up Bryce Terang. I was going to start him. And then I think the first game got rained out or postponed or something. I think it was a rain out. Or maybe he just didn't play. And I was like, you know what? I need someone at second base because this whole Matt McClain thing was getting to me. So I did end up picking up the other guy we'll talk about is Oswaldo Cabrera. But even before that, I think I picked up John Birdie because, you know, he went over to the Yankees and I was like, ooh, he might start first game. He didn't play. Then I picked up Cabrera. And meanwhile, Bryce Terang, you know, the next couple nights ends up getting like six stolen bases in three games or something. So I left a lot on the table there in a roto league. Like, I really hope I'm not missing those six stolen bases when, you know, the end of the season comes around. But I'm okay with it. I think if you need stolen bases, Bryce Terang is really good. But I'm okay with picking up Oswaldo Cabrera. But what are your thoughts on these two guys? Who would you prefer between the two?
I mean, I think that kind of comes down to what you need. I mean, if you need stolen bases, like, I mean, Bryce Terang leads the league in stolen bases right now. So, like,
yeah.
But, you know, honestly, like, I don't have a huge amount of faith in either of them to be guys you're going to want in your starting lineup, like, all season long. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They both have multi-position eligibility, which is nice, and they're hot. So, like, that's also nice. Like, I have no problem picking up either of these guys and putting them right into your lineup if you don't have if one of your players got hurt or – You know, I don't want to get too cute. You know, like, I have Francisco Lindor, who's off to a really slow start. I'm not going to bench Francisco Lindor for Bryce Terang, you know? Like, so, like, don't get too cute like that.
Yep.
But if you have a marginal player or if you have, like, multiple, maybe you have, like, a corner infield spot or a middle infield spot that you need to fill, like, these guys are hot. So, like, I'm all for picking him up, putting him right into your lineup. You know, Cabrera, I feel like, has more upside, I would say, because I think he, if you look at his minor league track record, he does have that blend of power and speed in his history that is enticing. But he also, you know, he has a limited track record and, like, hasn't had success in the major leagues prior to this. I mean, last year was a struggle for him. It was a struggle for Terang too, but he at least stole 26 bases. So I feel like Terang probably has the higher floor because you can kind of bank that he's going to steal some bases, whereas Cabrera probably has the higher ceiling because he's more of a five-category potential guy and plays in a better lineup.
Yeah, and I did mention John Birdie, who they did pick up, and they also have, I think, Peraza, who's getting healthy. So there are some other names who could be in the mix. So he is Cabrera is hot right now, and I do love the position eligibility. I think he's second, short, third, outfield. So yeah, like Castro, those things are nice to be able to move him around the infield and outfield.
Yeah, I mean, all of these guys like could be really good this season. I mean, Castro is my personal favorite just because he was the best of them last season, so I have the most confidence in him, I guess, but. He's off to a slow start this year where the other two are hot. So you could easily make the argument for them over him. But it does sort of come down to, like, you know, your position eligibility needs and things like that as well. Like, for me, I need a third baseman, not a shortstop or a second baseman. So I'm not out there looking at Terang over Castro, for example.
Yep. And the other note I had here before we move on was just, like, we were talking about Nico Horner before the show started. And it's like, I've moved him down a little bit. We didn't talk about him in the Shakers because he didn't really fit anywhere, but he's been batting seventh lately, which is not great. The whole idea of him batting leadoff and scoring a ton of runs and stealing bases was all good, but we already kind of cautioned people a little bit of the regression coming for Nico Horner. But now that he's at the bottom of the lineup, that is, Bryce Terang could be as good as Nico Horner this year, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I was like the biggest Nico Horner doubter of anyone that's coming into this season. I was way below consensus on him. In my rankings. And, yeah, I mean, I just felt like speed is really the only thing you knew you were going to get from him, and it's just very context-dependent, lineup-dependent, like you said. So for a player like that, getting pushed down the lineup is really a death knell to their fantasy value. So, like, he'll probably still be okay, but it wouldn't shock me if one or more of Terang, Cabrera, or Castro outperforms him.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at our rest season rankings, Horner is outside of our top 100. These other guys are kind of creeping up. I mean, Terang and Cabrera are sort of like around the 200 to 250 range. So they're trending in different directions, I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, just remember, like, Nico Horner, Ha-Sung Kim, Andrés Giménez, Bryson Stott, these guys that were in that tier where people were drafting, like, those guys last year at this time were Bryce Terang, Oswaldo Cabrera, and Willy Castro. You know, like,
absolutely.
They weren't considered any more highly than those guys are now. So just keep that in mind. Like, when guys are stolen base dependent, like, there's a lot of fluctuation there that can happen.
Yep. All right. Some other infielders to mention. I already kind of touched on JD Davis a little bit. You know, I wanted to talk about him a little bit, and you not as much. I get it. I get why. Justin Foscue, who is the rookie who the Rangers called up with the Josh Jung injury. They called him up, and he hasn't – I don't even think he's played yet. So, and then Christopher Morel is in the mix here. He's, I think, second in outfield eligible. I know you wanted to talk about Christopher Morel, so what are your thoughts here on these guys? And I know – I'm sure you like Morel the most by a long shot.
Oh, it's not even close. I mean, it's an insult to him to even put him in the conversation with these other guys, in my opinion. But,
yeah,
I mean, I have Morel. I think I've got him as borderline top 100 player at this point. Let's see. I've got him at 105 overall. You've got him at 211. So
yeah,
you've got some moving up to do, in my opinion. he's a talented player. He's the everyday cleanup hitter for the Cubs. It's a really good hitting environment there in Chicago. He's gonna add third base eligibility any day now because that's where he's playing most of the time. He does DH some, but he's gonna have third, second, and outfield batting cleanup. Last year, I believe 26 homers and 6 steals, didn't even play a full season. He's a young guy, so he could add more batting average than he has. I think that's still possible. He could, become a better plate discipline guy as he gets more acclimated to the majors. I see a lot of upside here. I see a guy that could easily have like a 30 homer, 10 stolen base season, or maybe he doesn't steal that much. Maybe he only steals 5 bases, but hits 35 home runs. Like, these are all things I think are possible for Christopher Morel. And I think he's going to drive in a ton of runs in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, he's off to a hot start. I think we know what JD Davis is. He's just going to play every day. He'll probably be like better in points leagues because the A's are just going to play him. And then Justin Foscue, former first round pick in 2020. So like, he's got some prospect pedigree, but you know, it's unknown. We'll see how well he can fill in for Josh Jung. You know, the underlying or the projection systems have him batting like 231. We'll see. I don't know if he's going to be able to bat 260 or 265 like we probably thought Josh Jung would do and hit the home runs, and who knows what the stolen bases will be. There just isn't a ton of track record and none in the majors.
Yeah, and we also have to see if he's an everyday player. I don't think that's a certainty either, so... He does have some interesting blend of power and speed in the minors, though. So, like, he's certainly a name to keep an eye on.
Yep. All right. A few outfielders. We've got, like, some veterans and a couple Reds to talk about. Lourdes Gurriel and Michael Conforto are off to hot starts. And I think, you know, like, we're probably pretty lukewarm on these guys coming into the season. I think last year even with Conforto's dealt with so many injuries. And so I think kind of like what I was talking about with his teammate Hicks, it's like he's healthy now, so go ahead and fire him up and play him. I mean, sometimes you just have to, like, if you need an outfielder, a utility guy, I love like picking guys like this up and just sort of like riding the hot hand. I mean, like what you're talking about with Christopher Morel, I mean, he's pretty well rostered, but like if he wasn't, like he's hitting every single game, so like you've got to pick up guys like this and just kind of ride the hot streak.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I mean, I think Gurriel is probably in another tier, like, because he's just sort of a consistent producer, you know, and he's in a good offense. Like, he's not special, you know, like, you know, honestly, I think his brother at his peak was more valuable than he's ever been. But like, the thing is, like, he's going to get you 20 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have 80 RBIs. He's going to hit for a decent batting average. You know, he's a 279 career hitter. So maybe only, you know, a handful of steals. But that adds up, you know, that he's the kind of player that, like, generally speaking, I don't draft because I'm always aiming higher. Like, I'd rather draft a guy with a high ceiling and a low floor than a guy with a high floor and a low ceiling. And I feel like that's kind of what he is. But he's on a hot streak right now. So, like, I would certainly ride the hot hand with him. And I do think over the course of the full season, he'll probably end up being, like, a top 150 type of player. I just don't know if, you know, he's going to be a guy you want to start all season. Conforto, yeah, it's been a while. Like, he almost reminds me of Soroka. Like, it's just been a while yeah. since these guys have been good, you know. But they were really good at one time. So, yeah, I can't say I'm confident he'll be good all season, but I'd certainly ride the hot hand there if I needed to. But I actually think Will Benson might be preferable to both of those guys because I just think we've seen this time and again with the Reds. You know what I mean? Like, whoever plays for the Reds puts up really good numbers. And Will Benson is batting second the last 2 days in the lineup. So, like, you know, he bats down at the bottom of the lineup against lefties, but against righties, he's batting second. So,
yeah,
like, he could put – and he's got power and speed. They pretty much said they see him as an everyday player. So, you know, things could obviously change when TJ Friedl is back, but I'm not sure they will. I mean, he seems to be ahead of Fraley in the pecking order for playing time. So, I think Benson is a really strong pickup.
Yeah. I think, he definitely adds a dimension of speed that Gurriel doesn't really have. The interesting thing is they both have a stolen base early in the season, but Gurriel, that could end up being like his only stolen base of the year. So I do have it ranked between those guys. I have Gurriel, then Benson, then Conforto. So yeah, I just, for all the reasons like you said about Gurriel, like he does have the consistency. He's going to get 20 home runs. He's going to bat 270, yada, yada. When I thought about like the outfield episode, when we were comparing everyone to like Brian Reynolds and Nick Castellanos, it's like,
yeah,
we could have talked about Gurriel in the same breath as these kind of boring guys because he's going to do that.
Yeah, he's just not quite as good as Brian Reynolds. You know, he's kind of like a poor man's Brian Reynolds,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, yeah, I just depends. You know, if you play in a points league, I think Gurriel is probably more valuable. And if you play in a really deep league, he's more valuable too,
because
mm-hmm. You're getting that certainty, that high floor. But in like a 12-team roto categories league, I just prefer Benson. I'd also, a guy that we don't even have on the list, Jose Siri of the Rays,
oh,
is
yeah.
another guy I think I would prefer over Gurriel in that format. But yeah, it's to me, it would definitely be in a 12-team roto categories, it's Benson and Siri, then Gurriel, then Conforto. In a points league or a deep league, I'd probably take Gurriel first.
Okay. And then, like we talked about, Estuary Ruiz, I think we're both in agreement that you can drop that guy, like let him go to the waiver wire. Some other like highly dropped guys in the outfield, Dalton Varsho, James Altman, Eloy Jimenez, who we talked about picking up the injury. Would you add like a Will Benson or Jose Siri over some of these guys?
Some of them, not Altman. I'm sticking with Altman. I know he's yeah. off to a really slow start, but I kind of see Altman as a similar type of player to Christopher Morel, honestly. Like, you know, he could drive in a lot of runs, he could hit for a lot of power, honestly, with a decent amount of steals. So yeah, I still have high hopes for Altman.
Okay. I would agree.
But who are the other ones you mentioned?
Let's see, Dalton Varsho.
I'd be fine dropping Dalton Varsho for Benson or Siri or Gurriel. I mean, I don't know what it is we're really expecting from Dalton Varsho. I mean, I think he was a much more interesting player when he had catcher eligibility, and I don't really see him as a special player as an outfielder.
Yeah, and I think Benson has similar upside as far as like the stolen base juice. I think Eloy is the tough one for me. A lot of people are dropping him. It's like, okay, he's hurt. He's going to be hurt. You know me. I'd probably hold on to Eloy for another week.
Yeah, I'd be fine dropping him for Benson or Siri if I needed some speed in particular, because you're not going to get that from Eloy.
Yep. Any love for Benson's teammate, Nick Martini? I don't know if he's going to be an everyday player. He's already missed a couple games, but He's been pretty productive when he's been in there. He's just 13% rostered.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to pick him up right now. But, like, yeah. I mean, it's anyone that is playing regularly for the Reds is interesting to me.
Yep.
So, like, it would not surprise me if Nick Martini ends up being a valuable player at some point. Like, you know, given the fact that he's you know, only started in three of the last five games, I'd say, like, he's more of a watchless guy right now. But
yep.
If he can lock down more regular playing time, then, yeah, I'd absolutely be intrigued.
Okay. We also talked about Luis Camposano a little bit, so we'd mention him again here. He's off to a really hot start. Of course, the Padres have a couple extra games under their belt. But I was just looking at the most added dropped at Yahoo, and, you know, would you drop a guy like Cal Raleigh or Jonah Heim, who I don't think you were necessarily high on either of these guys coming in? Would you drop them for a Luis Camposano?
Yeah, I think I might have had him ahead of them even before the season began.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I was pretty high on Camposano coming into the season too. Like, he was good last season, you know.
Yep.
This isn't coming out of nowhere that he's doing this. So I've got Camposano at 167 overall. I've got Cal Raleigh at 271 and Jonah Heim at 272. So
yep.
I'm significantly higher on Camposano.
Yeah, I think it's closer for guys like Logan Ohapi, Keibert Ruiz, you know, because you're talking about similar guys who are young and have promise. Ohapi especially, I feel like he could have a really good season. So I'd have a hard time dropping Ohapi for Camposano after just a week.
Yeah, I like Ohapi a lot too. That one I could go either way on. I mean, Ohapi's also been good, though. I mean, he's 6-for-12 so far this season. He just doesn't have a lot of accompanying production. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a catcher that's batting .500 for you so far this season, you're probably not looking to drop them.
All right, I had another one for you. When we were talking Jackson Holliday, I forgot to mention. So, would you drop Jackson Holliday for Jackson Merrill? Because I have them pretty close in my rankings. I have them both sort of around, like, 150. You know, I was super high on Jackson Holliday coming in, some with the Orioles bias, and I definitely had him well inside my top 100, but not making the opening day roster. I had to move him down, but I didn't move him down that much. Like, personally, I think I'd probably hang on to Holliday. It's not one that I'm, like, rushing to the waiver wire to make that move, but curious your thoughts there.
In a redraft league?
Yeah, just a redraft league.
I think I would, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, say that Jackson Holliday got called up tomorrow. Like, what is your level of confidence that he will be better than Jackson Merrill in the rest of this season?
Right, I think it's like 60-40.
If even.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, yeah, I think so.
Well, but Jackson Merrill's also been pretty good so far. I mean, he's more than holding his own. So, like, you know, he doesn't seem like he's going to have the bottom-out scenario. Like, it's always possible that Jackson Merrill or Jackson Holliday has that bottom out scenario too. So
yeah,
I'd say it's like 55-45 maybe.
Okay.
So, like, yeah. And again, like you said, like, I, you know, we as fantasy managers are like, oh, sure, of course the Orioles are going to call him up tomorrow. He's so good. But, like, they might wait a month. They might wait 6 weeks. You know, we don't know. So in a redraft league, that's like a quarter of the season, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I mean, when it's two young guys that both have a lot of unknown potential, I think I would lean towards the one who's actually up and playing right now.
Okay. And both have shortstop eligibility. Jackson Merrill has outfield. And then if Holliday makes it up, he should gain second base, just as a reminder.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the right answer, if you have enough bench spaces, the right answer might be just roster both of them, you know?
Why not?
I think Merrill is definitely under rostered at 38% in Yahoo. He should be higher than that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So the final topic of discussion here on this episode is closers and bullpens, and there's a lot of news there. There always is, but it seems like there's been more than usual to begin this season. Part of it is injury related. Paul Sewald of the Diamondbacks on the IL. Jordan Romano of the Blue Jays is on the IL. Of course, Devin Williams is out for half the season, so there were a lot of bullpens to track, and then there's other ones that were just kind of unclear coming into the season or have quickly become muddled by poor performances. So why don't we go through them and just give our takes here. We'll
sure.
start with those with the Diamondbacks. Sewald dealing with oblique injury right? So he's, you know, looking at probably he's already started a throwing program, which is kind of surprising. Like, that's a little sooner than I was anticipating that to happen, but that doesn't necessarily mean a lot. I mean, it's a grade two oblique strain, so like that sounds like a 6 week to 2 month injury to me.
Yeah.
I'm sure you noticed in our keeper league, I bid very aggressively on Kevin Ginkle. I just think this is a team that went to the World Series last season. Kevin Ginkle is a very proven player, and he's the clear closer in the absence of Sewald. He hasn't picked up a save yet, but he's closed out a couple games with 4-run leads. And I just like, you know, he's not the most dominant pitcher out there, but he's very solid. And I think he's going to be, you know, a top 15 type of closer for the next 2 months.
Yeah. And I think there's a chance it's not 55-45 like we were talking about with that Jackson scenario, but there's also a chance that Ginkle just keeps the job. You know, like, there is a chance. Whereas, like, with the Twins scenario with, like, Duran, I don't see that happening with, like, the Griffin Jacks and Stewart. But with this one, I kind of do, because, like, Sewald is a bit older. I think this might be his last year under contract. Like, why wouldn't they just maybe just hand it over to Ginkle if he's playing well? So I'm looking at our ranking of Ginkle, and somehow we both ranked him exactly 186, which that happens sometimes. You have Sewald 185. I have Sewald 227. So I actually ranked Ginkle over Sewald rest of season because, like you said, maybe it's a couple months. But I also just think, like, what if it's more of a committee, or what if Ginkle just keeps the job afterwards? So it's more of a bird in the hand situation. I think you being aggressive with Ginkle was smart. I was a little asleep at the wheel. I don't know if I would have bid that much, because I'm still trying to kind of feel out, like, how much to bid on certain guys. But I think it was a good pickup, because he could just be the guy all year.
Yeah, I ended up outbidding everybody else by a lot. So I always hate that feeling. But again, we've talked about it before. This is an innings capped league where high impact relievers make an outsized difference. So I felt it was and remember the closer run that happened in our draft too. Like, people are closer crazy in this league too.
Yeah.
So I felt like oftentimes people waste their fab on guys who don't end up even being the closer. And this one, given the certainty I had that he was going to be the closer for however long Sewald's out, I honestly hadn't even really considered the point you made about him just stealing the job. But you're right, that's absolutely possible. I mean, Sewald only joined them midway through last season too, so it's not right. Like, he has a long track record of being their closer. So yeah, if Ginkle pitches really well, you're right, they might. And even if you know, Sewald does eventually get the job back, he could, like, they probably don't, if Ginkle's pitching well, they probably don't make Sewald the closer right when he comes back. Like,
right,
he'll probably work in setup for a while to kind of get his sea legs under him and get back to the level of performance he needs to close out games. So
yep,
you could be looking at 3 months at least of Ginkle as the closer.
Yep. So the next two, the Brewers and the Tigers, those situations, I'm just looking at, you know, Yahoo rostership. Abner Uribe and Jason Foley are in, like, the 60 to 65% rostered range, and, like, that needs to just get way higher. You know, they're the guys. And, you know, I liked Alex Lang coming into the season. You know, I liked him because I like the Tigers. You know, I talked about the Tigers probably every episode. Like, I think they're going to win the AL Central. I thought Lang would be the guy. I mean, he threw a third of an inning, had a rough outing, and he hasn't even pitched since. And, you know, Foley has just been the closer. I think he's probably been the closer for a couple weeks now. We just didn't really know it before the season started. So, yeah, add these guys if they're available in your leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that Foley certainly has to be the priority of the two, because, like, he could be the closer of the whole season, whereas, you know, Uribe will eventually have to deal with Devin Williams coming back, presumably.
Definitely.
So, I mean, 3 months is no short amount of time. So I really agree with what you're saying. Both of them should be much more rostered. Foley was a guy I was not, I mean, you know me, I was way, way out on Alex Lang before
yes.
the season began. So,
you were.
So that I'll take a little victory lap on. I was not in on Foley, though. I was basically just thinking that the Tiger situation was one to kind of avoid in drafts, because there was just nobody I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought maybe Shelby Miller would end up being the guy. But I mean, I didn't feel strongly about that. I just kind of felt like What I basically thought was if Foley got the opportunity, he'd be the guy we saw last season, which is like, he had a good walk rate and a good ERA, but like his strikeout rate was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It's been really bad his whole career, but it's so far this year, he's missing bats at a high level and he does have good stuff. So like he could just be like a reinvented pitcher, you know, that mm-hmm. happens sometimes. So like he could end up being a really good closer. So he's been a big mover for me. Abner Uribe, I'm surprised how quickly that situation has kind of resolved itself, because it was like a three-headed monster with like which of these guys is going to get saves. And the fact Uribe already has three saves, like McGill, I believe, is injured now. Piamps did get one, right? But I think it was like a context dependent save. Like, I think Uribe wasn't available.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's pretty clear that Uribe is the first choice at this point, and tons of strikeouts in his minor league career and in 30 innings last season with the Brewers as well. So, I think has the potential to be a really lights out closer for a few months here.
Oh, and it looks like Piamps kind of got lit up a little bit today, took the loss against the Ooh. Twins, gave up four okay. earned runs. So, yeah, I mean, the big point here is, like, you know, if these guys are still available in your league, like, definitely pick them up. Like, these are the guys, and you have to pivot. Like I said, you were definitely down on Lang. I liked him coming into the season, so I'll take the L there. But if, like, these guys are available, I'm picking them up.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of leagues have weekly waivers, so that might be why the roster rates haven't quite hit yet. But And then in some leagues, saves just aren't that valuable. So that could explain it somewhat too. But I do expect both of their roster rates to continue to rise.
All right. So what about the Blue Jays? Jordan Romano, you mentioned dealing with the injury. Have you added Yimi Garcia anywhere? Chad Green, speculatively? I mean, neither of these guys are that interesting to me. It's like if you have Romano, you just hope that he comes back soon.
Yeah, I mean, the news on Romano has been pretty positive. So, you know, I do think Yimi Garcia is a decent pitcher, but I don't think he's a lock to be the closer anyway, because I believe the Blue Jays beat reporter actually listed Green as a favorite over Garcia to get saves in the interim. But the big picture is just that it's looking like not going to be much longer for Romano to get back. I mean, they also, you know, Swanson could be back as well. And, he would probably jump Garcia and Chad Green in the pecking order if he was healthy and Romano wasn't. So there's just not really a high priority add on while you wait for Romano, unless we get some sort of news of a setback for Romano. And that would obviously change the calculus.
Yeah. And it's just Swanson's coming back from a forearm injury, Romano elbow inflammation. So these are not... these are not good things either. So like, there's no sure thing. So maybe Yimi Garcia is like just decent. Like he probably should be more rostered just because like he might be the closer a little bit more into the season. If these other guys are dealing with more long-term injuries, you never know.
Yeah. Or Chad Green though. I mean, yeah. we don't know which one it would be. I mean, neither of them have a save yet.
That's true. Well, we've got the Rangers on the list here, which is, I mean, super interesting. Like talking about the World Series champs here. You know, we already talked about the Diamondbacks who were the runner-ups, but Leclerc, you know, Robertson, like who do you think is going to have more saves this year?
Well, I have them both rostered right now, and my more immediate question is whether I should actually even have Jose Leclerc in my starting lineup every day now, because he's been hurting my ratios. He's been really bad so far. I did decide to stick him in today, and he gave up another run. Robertson pitched the eighth and did not give up a run. Leclerc pitched the ninth and did. It's just kind of more of the same, you know. Robertson looks really good. He actually has more life on his fastball than he has in the past. So, he could be a really good closer if he gets the opportunity. Like, and honestly, I would kind of like to see that, because then I don't have to devote two roster spaces to this team. Although honestly, if Leclerc can do what he has done in past seasons, then like I'm fine with just having Robertson as like a setup man who's going to have a really good strikeout rate and good ratios. But I mean, the thing about Leclerc is like his end of season numbers always seem to look good, but he always has these ruts, you know, and they're often early in the season. And he can just, last year he just lost the closer job in the first couple weeks of the season and never got it back. So it seems like that could be happening again this year.
Yeah, and I mean, Robertson, he picked up his third hold today if you're in saves plus hold league. So like you said, he's rosterable regardless, but man, I mean, Robertson's had, you know, it's been a while. You know, it's been 10 years since he's had like 30 plus save seasons, but he's had saves in more recent, you know, seasons. He can get the job done. I mean, we could certainly see this one switch over. So make sure that Robertson is at least rostered.
Yeah. God, has it really been 10 years? Are we that old?
We are that old. Robertson is, he's 35% rostered, by the way. Like, he's one of those guys who needs to be way more rostered than that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for right now, I think both of these guys are must roster players because it's, like you said, the defending World Series champions. Both of these guys have histories of putting up good accompanying numbers as well. So you just kind of got to wait it out and see how it plays out. I'd love to, I mean, I am rostering both of them, and I would encourage other people to do the same while we see how it plays out.
All right, what about with the Royals? We've got Will Smith. You know, we talked about this as a pretty tenuous situation. This is someone who got some saves for the Rangers, who we just got done talking about. I didn't get the chance to see any of the Orioles game today. It was supposed to be a day game, got super delayed. So I know you had the issues with Masson. I had issues with work getting in the way. So, and then just, you know, get home and have to deal with the kids and all that. So, yeah. It looks like Will Smith is the one who blew the save, gave up the walk-off. So, I don't know, man. Could be MacArthur. It looks like it was Angel Zerpa who was actually in before Will Smith. So, everyone thinks maybe MacArthur, but he gave up a couple runs too. So, this one's a little bit murky. It might not just be Will Smith or MacArthur. We got another guy in the mix.
Well, actually, we have more than one other guy in the mix because Closer Monkey has John Schreiber as first in line behind Will Smith, not James MacArthur. So
okay,
it's messy. I mean, generally speaking, the Royals are one of those teams that likes to build up trade value for a closer and then try to trade them at the trade deadline. But that's something that they've done as like they've been in rebuild mode. But you sort of ask the question like, are they in rebuild mode this year, or do they think they can actually compete? I mean, they're off to a 2-4 start, so it's not like they're off to a great start, but that division is very wide open.
They did
almost win today, and then it'd be different. So we're dealing with really small sample size at this point. But generally speaking, I feel like this is a team that, like, they want Will Smith to be the closer so that he can build up trade value and they can trade him, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe, like, the Pirates have done the same kind of thing in the past. Maybe it's not going to be possible because maybe Will Smith is just washed. I mean, he could be, you know, because he's looked really bad so far. So I'm not rushing out to pick up anybody else because we don't know who it would even be. But if we do see somebody else get a save there, then you might have to consider picking them up.
Yeah, and I think I'd be okay dropping Will Smith at that point. Like he's hurting you right now. He's 53% rostered. I think we're going to see that drop below 50% here because in that scenario, like you're talking, if they try to build him up to trade him, he's going to go somewhere else and be like a seventh inning guy probably. You know, he's going to go to a team who needs like another reliever, but he's not going to go somewhere else and close, I bet.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I do think Will Smith has, you know, historically been a pretty solid pitcher. So like, there's still some hope for him. I mean, he did get a save with the scoreless inning yesterday. So, you know, he's had two awful outings and one good outing. But yeah, he's got to be on thin ice at this point, you'd think.
Yep. Any other closer situations? I know we were considering talking about the Reds. Alexis Diaz actually got the save tonight. I kind of touched on the Twins. The Pirates, the White Sox is kind of an interesting one. There's lots, but we're only a week into the season, so I don't know if you want to touch on any of these before we get out of here.
I'm a little worried about Alexis Diaz long term holding onto the job. So I had him lowered in my rankings than a lot of people, like closer to like the Tanner Scott range of potentially flammable pitchers. You know, I think the Griffin Jacks Brock Stewart battle in Minnesota is still ongoing. They've both pitched the ninth in close games recently, so that they might just mix and match there. I'm not sure the Twins are going to have a closer while Duran is out, because really Rocco Baldelli's history is not having a closer. Like, it was kind of an exception last year with Duran that he did that. So
right,
so he might not do that with these guys. White Sox, yeah, I mean, Kopech just got a save today. I think he's got to be considered the front runner, but it could still be a committee. And then the question is how many saves they get. Same thing with the A's. I mean, Mason Miller, I think just the strikeout potential makes him interesting on its own, but he's still probably the only A's reliever I'd consider rostering.
Yeah, I think you can roster Mason Miller regardless because he just looks so good. And even Kopech, like you just mentioned, I think especially since he just got the save, I'm about ready to drop Brebbia, I think, in our league. You know, I was just going to give it a week or 10 days to kind of shake out because I still thought, well, and he still might get a save or two here and there.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily want to hang on to a Brebbia right now.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't hold on to a Brebbia or the Brebbia or whatever, you know, pronoun you want to use. All right. Well, I think that about covers it. It was a lot to cover on tonight's show. Action packed, plenty to discuss. We do, as a reminder, have updated rest of season rankings up at rosrankings.com. So please do make sure to go and check those out. We're going to be trying to update those every week moving forward. And we will continue to be talking about movers and shakers in those rankings as we forge ahead into April here. You know, the season started a little early in Korea, but now we're in our first full week, and hopefully not too many more games get rained out this week, Bart.
Oh, no kidding. A preview for next episode. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about you considering putting Mookie Betts as your number one overall player.
Ooh. It's tempting. I mean, I don't think I can put him over Acuna yet.
Oh, I don't know. It's trending that way.
Mookie just seems like he wants to have the monster season of all monster seasons this year, man.
I know.
He's fun to watch.
He is.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to us on Twitter. I am at @Andrew_Seifter.
And I am at Barton Wheeler. We appreciate everyone listening to the podcast. If you like the show, please follow, share, rate, and review. We are out of here.
We gone.
You've been listening to the Rest of Season Rankings podcast. Go to www.rosrankings.com for more.